Hi, welcome to the Parasocial Social Club.
I'm Charlie James.
I'm Jewel Karenin, and we're your hosts.
And you are tuning into a podcast all about the spectacular, world-bending power of parasocial relationships.
We dive into our own parasocial relationships.
And we interview the people we have parasocial relationships with.
Today, our guest of parasocial honor is Sky Smith, lore keeper at Dropout TV's Dimension 20.
We chat about Twitter stalking, running away from a Broadway stage door,
interacting with the ever-powerful and fascinating dynamics of Dropout fandom.
And Sky gives us a DVD commentary on past episodes of our very own podcast.
Welcome to the Parasocial Social Club.
Hi.
I'm Jewel Karenin.
I'm Charlie Jam.
Good morning to you.
Good morning. Good morning. There's gotta be copyright.
There's this video of Zac Efron singing that from when he was filming High School Musical 2. That's it. I love that video.
And there you go.
There you have it.
I didn't know we were taking videos back then.
It was like, it's like a very low quality video. It probably was on a BlackBerry.
Mm.
We weren't taking videos back then.
We weren't really.
No.
That wasn't really a part of stuff.
I love that video. It's grainy, ugly.
I love, can I say, 480p? Oh, my skin looks amazing. You can't even really tell I'm not a newborn baby. It's pixelated.
We can all agree that new iPhones are violent.
It's showing too much.
iPhone cameras.
That's, when I say modesty, that's what I'm against. You shouldn't be able to see my pores,
yeah.
Okay? That's a little too much skin. Cover up.
That's slutty.
That's slutty. That's slutty to show online.
Charlie, what's going on with you parasocially?
Nothing much. Here's a story. Picture this. I'm in college. I'm a closeted white man. The white was apparent. The man was not ready.
Got it.
He was undercooked. But I had this English teacher in high school who was like, maybe because I was just kind of annoying. I don't really know what the reasoning was. But he was like, I think he would love the work of David Foster Wallace, which is obviously a huge read. But at the time, I was like, great recommendation. Thank you. And I read Infinite Jest my senior year, and it mattered a lot to me.
How many pages?
It's like 1,000 something.
Can you 58. Guys believe this shit?
I know.
Can you guys believe this shit?
I know.
We would. The modern publishing industry would never.
It's a lot of footnotes.
Never.
It's about 200 pages of footnotes, which is sort of silly.
I think that's fun, actually.
It was fun. It was like a puzzle. I had to be like, oh, okay, I got to refer back to this thing, you know? And loved the book and read kind of everything else by him except for, you know, the really early stuff is hard to get through. No offense to David Foster Wallace, RIP. But when I was in college, there was a David Foster Wallace conference in Southern Illinois at the college he used to teach at. And me and my friend Amanda went together. Speaking of parasocial, I just was like, that would be fun.
That's
I love
so
this
cute.
Guy. She loves this guy. Let's do it. And we arrived. Oh my God. It was a treat. There's a weird game in Infinite Jest that he made up called Eschaton, and they play it like at the conference.
What a bunch of sweet nerds.
The nerdiest nerds you'll ever meet. And it's like a whole weekend of basically panels about his work where people present like whatever dissertation they've been working on about David Foster Wallace. And we were the only people who were there just for vibes, I guess. Like, we were just fans. And
you
everyone
were just
else.
Just attendees.
Everyone else is like, I'm getting my PhD in, you know, Foster Wallace studies. And we were like, oh, we are 21 and 25.
Yeah.
And we had the best time ever. But yeah, that I delved deep.
That's
into
so
some
cute.
Parasocial stuff.
Just for one day?
It was 2 days, and at the time I had a van that had a little house in the back, so I was like, we'll just stay
yeah.
in the van. And Amanda was like, I can't believe that this is the plan. I don't want to do it. So there was a lovely pair, I want to say a couple, yeah, that were there who offered us to stay in their hotel room, and I know that they were strangers, but we did take them up. We took them up on it because the vibe was okay. It was okay. And so we stayed there. in their room with them.
Amanda approved of that plan?
That's what's weirder to me. I'm like, you don't want to stay in my car. You want to go to a stranger's. But honestly, they were so normal. They had an extra bed, an extra queen bed.
That was very extremely generous of them.
Extremely. To see two wayward Wallace fans. Yeah. And say, you should be inside.
That's very sweet.
Isn't that nice?
I love when there's conventions about anything. I think conventions are like one of the better human inventions.
I love a convention. You know, there's a Flannery O'Connor conference, which they should have called Flannery O'Conference. I've been saying for years.
So true.
But yeah, if I was into that, I would have been there.
I just had a flash to this Tumblr post I read once, which was about how every single convention is one or two events away from completely collapsing.
Yes.
Like conventions are like extremely difficult to run and extremely expensive and the profit margins are very thin. And whoever wrote that Tumblr post, really good job. I liked it.
It seems accurate because things go away all the time.
It's true.
Famously, JFL left for about a year.
Just
I think they're coming back. Yeah. But that, I was like, if this goes under, that means anything can go away.
Because that feels very like serious.
I mean, they like ran, you know, the city of Montreal for like a month. It's crazy.
These fucking comedians.
Yeah.
These comedians.
You're telling me this isn't lucrative? That's insane. But
that's so true.
Yeah.
Well, that's a very cute little story, Charlie.
Thank you so much.
I was expecting a violent turn and
no,
yet none
I got a
occurred.
Tattoo. That's about the craziest thing.
At the convention?
Yeah, and I hate to say, but there's a chapter head in Infinite Jest at the front of each chapter, and it's this little moon, and I got it tattooed.
You hate to say it?
I hate to say, because David Foster Wallace is like famously kind of canceled for sort of rampant misogyny.
As most male authors are.
That's the thing. Is
not
it's like,
special. You're not special, David
You're not
Foster
special.
Wallace.
You're not special. What? Because you hated women?
Join the club. Get in the back.
So does everyone.
Harken back to that.
Harken to that. Hey, harken to that. That's going to be for no one but the real fans, and I appreciate that.
No, they're going to. You guys are going to hear a discussion of this later, actually.
Yeah. Spoiler. Jewel, any thoughts from you?
Yes.
Parasocial?
Yes. It's been so strange and fun and weird to release this podcast and to just hear the feedback.
Yeah.
Because now we've done a couple episodes now. People are starting to get people are starting to pick up what we're putting down.
People are listening to the podcast.
People are listening to the podcast, and we really appreciate you. Presumably, you are listening to this podcast.
If you're hearing this, I guarantee you're a listener.
Presumably.
You're listening.
That's awesome. So, anyways, I've just been thinking about that a lot. Probably 60% of my time is spent thinking about that in various ways.
Aww.
And, yeah.
So much.
A lot.
I feel on your mind.
I need a break.
Okay. Well...
But I wanted to read one of our reviews.
Please.
This is a really sweet review. And we talked a little while ago. We were like, should we read the reviews on the pod?
Yes. Feels right.
And
tonally.
Okay. Here it is. It's by Drea. The title of the review is Funny and Insightful. Stop. Literally, like, that's like funny.
This isn't our Drea, is it?
This is our Drea.
Oh.
We know this Drea.
I don't think I knew that was our Drea's last name.
Drea has a pseudonym for the Apple Podcasts.
Great.
The two hosts, 5 stars. The
Smart.
Two hosts are hilarious and have great banter.
Oh.
They are my new parasocial obsession, parentheses, inception. Good joke, Drea. Also, I'd never heard of PJ Vogt. I'd never heard of PJ Vogt before this podcast, and now I look forward to getting updates on his life.
Yay. We're really upping his standing.
This man's Google
in the culture.
Trend, his
yes.
chart, is going up because of us.
I hope he listens and sees he's in the notes or something. You know.
Oh, we got to start putting him more in the notes.
Well,
yeah.
Because
you know he's searching for himself.
I'm sure there's a transcript somewhere that he has to, I mean, right?
He's probably Googling. Reads all transcripts of all podcasts, too.
That's what you have to do when you have a podcast.
That's what I
That's
do.
That's what our time is spent doing.
That's what the other 40% of my time is spent doing.
Is reading transcripts of podcasts.
Of other podcasts.
It's a lot of work.
So, Drea, thank you so much for that review. And please leave us a review. We might read it on the pod.
That'd be... Hey.
And again, be nice or not, but the point is just leave 5 stars.
Yes.
We don't really care what you say.
Strongly, if you have nothing nice to say, DM us. But if you're leaving a review, keep it sweet. Why not? I don't know who we're giving this advice to. No one has said anything negative.
It could happen.
Could happen.
I'm eager to see.
I don't want to peeve anyone.
The future is wide open.
For hatred and strife. Well.
And damn, we have a really, really fun interview today.
Yeah.
With Sky Smith. So shall we get into it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Bye.
Bye.
I am extraordinarily excited to introduce our guest for this episode of the Parasocial Social Club, Sky Smith.
Yay!
Sky is an extremely talented writer and creative known for their work as the official lorekeeper.
Official lorekeeper.
And story editor.
Story editor.
Of For Dimension 20 on Dropout, which is the streaming network formerly known as College Humor. Sky was also assistant director on the Party web series, in which I played the character Ecstasy, allegedly.
Can't be proven
through any means. Shout out to any Dropout or the Party fans who are listening to this episode.
And
thank you so much.
Those circles are a Venn diagram.
Yes, very much.
Sky has a very, very interesting take on the parasocial phenomenon because they've experienced it from many angles as a fan, as a neutral observer to colleagues and friends who have rabid fan bases, and as an object of parasocial love and fascination himself. Sky, you are a parasocial icon and a scholar. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much.
Is this our first scholar?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
I showed up with a notebook full of notes.
I love, and that's a scholar.
And that's a scholar. And that's on ADHD. It was notes or I forget everything I was going to say.
Yep. This is our first scholar because Sky, well, we'll get into it. You have so much to offer this field.
Too much. I fear.
So to set the scene for everybody, you work for a very beloved series of Dropout shows. I'm thinking of Dimension 20, but you've also worked on Very Important People with Vic Michaelis and Smarty Pants and Breaking News.
Yes.
And Dropout has a huge...
It's rabid.
Rabid.
It's feral.
It's fandom.
Yeah.
Toe tag, somewhat affectionate. Sometimes a little scared, mostly affectionate.
Yes.
We do love our fans. They are... Many in number and very intense.
I've experienced, this is my connection to this, because I work at the Elysian Theater.
Yeah.
And when Dropout people do shows there, oh my God. It's always the nicest people with the hours before the show starts. People will show up, I don't know what the official name for this, but they're like autograph hounds.
Yeah.
To get them to sign stuff. But we have a policy where we don't bring them through the place that those mm-hmm. people are. Mm-hmm. And so it's always pointless. But they're there like sometimes 3 hours before the show.
Yeah.
Damn.
It's a lot.
Yeah. So Dropout's fandom is very interesting. And probably a lot of people who aren't tuned in don't know about it, but it's like it's so huge. And we're going to talk about your experiences with that a little later.
Yes.
But we just got into it a little bit, but let's give the people a little bit of an explanation about what is Dropout.
Yes. So Wikipedia definition, streaming service, American subscription platform.
And both true.
Notably produced by a company by the same name, Dropout.tv, better known in the past as College Humor. No longer College Humor. If you call it College Humor, they'll take you out back and silence you.
Whoa.
They hate when I make that joke.
Because of the truth of it.
Because they've tried to silence me and it just doesn't work. But yes, so very niche content now. Once upon a time, mostly known for their like hardly working sketches. They used to have articles. Very big. I often refer to it as like alternate BuzzFeed when I'm trying to describe it to people in my family.
Yeah.
Who sort of don't think I have a real job.
Let me just say, Sky has a very real job.
It's real.
Yeah, and it's also fake.
Your name is Lorekeeper.
That's not a job title in this industry. And the reason that they had to tack on story editor for me is because when I got hired, I was like, not that I am already planning for the next thing, but like in this industry, you have to, right? You have to think about how this is going to get you jobs one day. And I cannot have a resume that says lore keeper as my biggest job. Like, this is the biggest, highest paying, like best job I've ever had. And lore keeper is not a title in this industry.
Right. You can't be like, well, I kind of keep the lore.
Right.
I guard the lore. I know the lore.
Speaking of your social, many people online are often like, what is a lore keeper? And I have been like, there's really only like two in this industry. You know, like you're not, don't pay attention to that title. Like, don't worry about it.
Right.
And I once had someone comment back to me and be like, actually, there's one more working on The Legend of Zelda franchise. And I was like, okay, well, first of all, don't tell me I'm wrong because I'm never wrong. I was talking about the TTRPG industry and actual plays. But also, I feel like being like, actually, you're wrong. There's not two, there's three. Not sort of the sleigh we're looking for.
No. Yeah, exactly.
Doesn't really prove what you hope it proves.
Damn, well, this is like, Jewel just learned that, what is it? A few means like three or more?
Three.
A few means anywhere from 2 to 12.
It doesn't mean two.
A couple is two.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
I need everyone to know, when I say a couple, I just mean a few. I'm so sorry for
Why did you just say a few?
That's not how that works.
Because to me, they're synonyms.
No.
So everyone just know, I'm not going to change. I'm going to keep saying a couple, and I mean a few.
And you're never going to say a few.
Jewel is hearing. She is learning. She's not going to change.
No, yeah. No. But I love when you say a couple, and I'm like, I think you mean five.
Translate to five. Always translate to five. No. Please. Thank you. Anyways, sorry. Great explanation of what Dropout is.
Thank you so much.
And so now, you know, there's all these different shows that they mm-hmm. produce, and it's a streaming platform just like Netflix where you pay for it, you log in, there are all your shows.
Yes. Mostly improvised content. There's some, like, we have gotten more into, we don't really do scripted stuff, but like more outlined stuff. Mm. We're like exploring new paths of improvised content. But I think the thing that sets us apart and gives us sort of such a niche that we like own in the industry is that almost all of our content is completely improvised.
Mm. Yes. Very
much so.
Which makes
it hard to keep the lore. I will say.
Because it's off the top of the dome.
Right.
And I think most improvisers are forgetting what they said immediately.
Yeah. Well, and that's very much like why I have a job is like, that's the whole point, is so that they don't have to think about it, because it detracts from like improv. If you have to keep like they want them to be able to say crazy shit. But I think it also really freaks out some performers because like, they're like, well, I don't want to be beholden to what I said. And I'm like, I like never know how to properly communicate. I'm like, you can tell me I'm wrong. Like, I can be like, you said this, and you can be like, no, I've decided that's not it. And that's what we go with.
Right.
I'm just there to say, hey, you said this.
That was,
if you care.
It happened.
Yeah.
Right.
I love it. Well, let's get into it.
We definitely don't need to tell you the definition of a parasocial relationship, but we're going to do it anyways.
Great. For the listeners.
Because, like, you know, maybe a first-time listener, a Sky fan is tuning in going, what the hell does this word mean?
Of course.
I think Dropout fans, there's no way.
Yeah.
But let's define your behavior for you, just in case.
Look in the mirror. A parasocial relationship is a one-sided relationship
in which we develop illusions of intimacy, friendship, and identification with a media persona.
Sky.
Yeah.
Had you heard of this concept before we asked to do this podcast?
No. And
shut the fuck
first
up.
Time. Shut the hell.
I have notes, baby. Definitely. I have a lot of issues with the way that it's talked about as a concept now. I have, not necessarily by you guys, but like just in general, I do think
we're with you.
It's overused, it's misused, it's whatever. So I do have sort of a lot of notes, which I do apologize for. I had heard of it, and we can get into it more in the scholar hour of like what it actually means.
Well, I want to hear what you think now. Like, because this... Yeah. We're talking about the definition.
Mm-hmm. I think there's a difference between like dictionary definition, which doesn't really exist because it's a sociology term, sociology, anthropology definition, which is where it comes from, and then how it's used now, which is
not
a definition of it. It's just that it's changed, as linguistics do. And so a part of that is that parasocial, when it was first introduced in 1956, was sort of neutral. It was like a description of a relationship. And I wrote down some stuff about it. the way that it was talked about at that time, because it was completely different. And it was very specifically, it was a study on, or not even a study, but like research on early television, because it 1956, ooh, it was the early years of television. It was the early years of talk show. And the music industry at the time, which is where a lot of parasocial relationships come from now, was different. There was a barrier of protection. There was no social media. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I could think the best example of parasocial at that time could be like Elvis, where he had all those women throwing themselves at him.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Beatles too. Similar
and the
vibe.
Beatles. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, but there was still this barrier of protection. Like Elvis performed and then he disappeared to go,
be him, which we don't want to talk about.
Right. I'm like, I don't think I can actually say what I think
go
he did.
Do a bunch of stuff that sucked.
He's doing whatever he was up to.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know, he went off to war. The country freaked out, but then he went. And that was it. There was no, so he wasn't, you know, vlogging live from war. So, like, that was it. And the country kind of moved on for a few years.
Ugh, right. We wish he would.
And we wish we had that footage. But nowadays there's more of a new, like, a negative tone to it. So it started out as very neutral. It was sort of just a name for this phenomenon that they were seeing as things became more readily available. And then these days people get very, very defensive when you say the word parasocial, because automatically people go, oh my God, negative, you're saying something bad about me.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, that's never how it is. Cause even when I was younger, like, I don't know that the word parasocial was thrown around as much, but that relationship was still there. That fandom was very, very present. And it was always somewhat toxic, but it wasn't like a moral judgment to be like, you're parasocial.
Mm-hmm.
It
mm-hmm.
was just a state of being. It was being a fan, which is a normal teen behavior. So I think part of the problem now, and part of the reason that there's like no productive conversations about it online or on Twitter specifically, but online in general, is because nowadays people automatically assume the negative. And so you can't even say the word without it becoming an argument.
Right. And we are here once again to say, for probably the seventh time on this podcast, it is not inherently negative.
No.
Everyone, no matter how like isolated you are, like a hermit in the woods could have a parasocial relationship with a squirrel that they see every day.
Yes. Wilson, the volleyball.
Parasocial relationship. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, do you think Wilson had a relationship to Tom Hanks?
I think Tom Hanks had a relationship to Wilson.
But was Wilson just hanging out? I think they had a real relationship, not
but
a heroine.
But here's my thing with the definition of parasocial in this case, is it doesn't mean one-sided as in there's no relationship. It's an imbalance.
Right.
Because even in media now, famous people have a relationship with the audience,
completely,
as a third party.
Right.
And so there is a relationship. The thing is, the relationship is not the same. It's not equal.
Right.
Yeah.
The girl crush I had in sixth grade was also a parasocial relationship. She was nice to me. We were friends. She didn't know who I was. I was in love with her. And she did not feel that way about me because she was 4 years older. And I was like 12.
Shouts out to her.
Shouts out to her for, you know, having a healthy boundary.
Smart. Keep it that way.
So, Sky, what active parasocial relationships are you engaged in right now?
You know, I think there are definitely some. I just went to a music festival, Muna. I've been listening nonstop. Not that I wasn't already a fan.
Oh, my God. Like,
no, exactly. Exactly. And I was listening to that on the way here.
They literally, for any losers who don't listen to Muna, they literally have a song called Number One Fan that is like basically the theme song of this podcast. If we didn't already have an amazing theme song made by Bridie.
Yeah.
So listen to it.
Wonderful song, huge. Also very empowering, because the whole thing is it like spins the like number one fan where it's like, I'm my own number one fan. Love that. I'm also very surprised that you have not talked about Muna on this podcast.
Thank you for except for recognizing my restraint.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's actually too real.
It's huge for
Jules. I kind of thought that was going to be in the like first episode and you were like F1 driver. And I was like, what are we talking about?
Actually,
no, but this has been interesting, is I do think we kind of save our deepest parasocial relationships for not on the podcast yet.
For sure.
We haven't gone. That's like, that's
too deep.
I'm like, you guys need to pay me if you want to hear about my Muna relationship.
Right. Subscribe to the Patreon. It's up now.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Pressure's on.
Yeah, we better.
I wrote down my parasocial relationships because the country's out of Vyvanse, and the thing is, I won't be able to function without it, and I have not been able to.
Call your reps.
And this is actually sort of the most important thing going on right now, actually. Honestly, what election?
It is important.
Who else did I have? Oh, Twitch streamers.
Yes.
I think that's a very interesting class of parasocial relationship because there is an element of return from that streamer.
Yeah.
And in my case, very specifically, I really only watch like a very small group of streamers consistently. And the reason I think that I've stuck with watching them regularly, because I've like gone in and out of phases. I really wanted to be a streamer myself. I really like got into Twitch streamers, especially during the pandemic. But I often would like fall off of watching them. I have a bunch of people I'm following that I don't watch anymore. And I think the thing that keeps me with the current group is that they are like, their community is not just like, there's not as big of a barrier. It's like a back and forth. The streamers know the people in their community. They know the regulars. We have like each other on social media. Like it's very much more community than it is like fan and streamer.
Yeah.
But I also think there's like a really big danger there because it creates a bigger illusion of this back and forth that is not, that it's a harder boundary to hold. Because
there's that chat that's going.
Yes.
Actively.
And when you're responding, when you know people in there, it gives people that you don't know this like emboldened feeling of like, they can say things like inside jokes that we have in the chat with the streamer. And then someone will come in as a first time chatter and say something out of pocket. And like, you feel a little bit bad because you're like, yeah, especially online, a lot of the people who are making faux pas like that don't have a great social sense, which I completely understand. So like you also don't want to like immediately think bad of them, but right. It's like, well, and actually you can't say she has great tits because like that's not okay.
We do here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's not okay.
Wait, what, which Twitch streamers?
You have to bleep it out. Will you bleep it out if I say it?
Yeah.
Because I'm in love with her. Her name is
Oh, I think I've heard of them.
Yeah. So the funny thing here, and you don't have to bleep the rest of this out. Thank you very much. The funny thing with this streamer very specifically, and part of the reason that I wanted to protect her identity and her community, is that I do have real life connections to her.
Mm.
And that makes the parasocial element even weirder because to me, like I am a part of her chat. I do know that I don't know her in real life, but I have friends that do and that have worked with her. And like,
so weird.
Yeah. And some of my real friends are real friends with her, but I met some of those real friends in this community. So it's like a weird thing to navigate. And it is a relationship that like is like to me fulfilling and something I want to like continue establishing. So like, I'm also hesitant to be like this person I'm very parasocial with.
Right.
But I do think like streaming and influencing has changed the nature of parasocial relationships in a really big way. So that's probably the most like classically parasocial that I get is I'm like, there's this person who really makes me feel seen and heard, but to them I'm a name in the computer. And
totally.
Like it's hard to keep that in mind for sure. I have a line item in here under my active parasocial relationships that just says gays.
Gays, gay
just
people.
Just sort of gay people in general.
I get what you mean, but what do you mean?
Right. It became because I was listing out like people that I'm actively a fan of, and a lot of it was like gay music artists because my entire music taste right now is just gay people.
Gay people.
And
gay people be making music and they won't stop.
And they won't stop. And I've been begging and I've been calling my representatives.
Yes. Two action items.
Yes.
Vyvanse
and get them gays to stop. Just
no more
stop.
Microphones for gay people.
Take them away. But and also I think there is like a aspect of like gay culture as someone who like my like coming out experience wasn't as tricky, I think, as a lot of people's. Mm-hmm. I grew up in California. I went to a hippie cult school for all of my school years. Like, I was like, I'm gay. And they were like, okay, great. Finish your homework. Like,
yeah.
Okay, great. Nerd.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care.
I was uncool for a number of other reasons that had nothing to do with the fact that I was gay. And so, like, there's like a weird thing of like, I feel tapped out of gay culture in a way because it was like, I didn't have a big gay community growing up, but I also didn't seek it out because I was fine in my community of people. And so like all of my like childhood friends well, that's not fair. A lot of them have come out after the fact. But in high school, a lot of my friends were ostensibly straight, or at least mostly dating men, because that's what we were surrounded by. And so I think, like, as hard as it is to make friends in general, I also really don't have, like, a very big queer community, except for that I've stumbled into accidentally through, like, work friendships, where I just happen to work at places where a lot of people are gay. And, like, that's wonderful and that's great, but I do feel like there's, like, an element where I'm, like, I want to, like, be a part of the, like gay astrology and, like, Butch Night and all of those things that happen, and I'm, like, I want to be a part of that, but I'm not. And so it's like almost parasocial the way that I think about it.
That's so real. That's so real. And it's like, it's not even about specific people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just like, about like a general
gay people.
Yeah.
It's just about a gay people.
A sort of gay people.
Gay people in general. I had something else. Oh, there's like a writer on TikTok that I feel very parasocially about. Her name's Caroline. I'm going to mess this up. Cleidonis.
Thank God it wasn't Caroline Calloway.
Yeah, I did see that. No, not Caroline Calloway. She does a lot of sketches, which as a writer are very, very, like, she does a lot of the, like, your typical fantasy movie romance or your typical, space movie romance.
Fun.
Yeah. Fun. And I love them. And my parasocial relationship with her is very much about the writing of it, where I'm like, I want to co-write with you because I have so many ideas in this niche. You have no, I've never even commented, I don't think. Like,
yeah.
No idea who I am. I can't, like, DM and be like, hey, like, I promise I'm a real Hollywood person. I really want to, like, co-write with you. Like, yeah. And in the same vein, like, Drew Talbert, the, like, Bistro Huddy guy, love those kinds of things, and I think that's very like my closest like parasocial.
I don't know what that one is.
He does the same kind of thing where it's like sketches, but it's all centered around, I think, his experiences in the food service industry, that he created this like fake restaurant, and he plays all of the characters and he writes them, and he does it so well that it's really easy to forget he's not all of these characters. Like, people are like shipping these characters
and it's like there's like it's him
fan
twice.
Edits and it's just like him in a wig multiple times. But yeah, and I think that's my like current active parasocial relationships. I don't have that many because like I'm immersed in the other side.
You're like,
of it
totally. These
all
are monogamous relationships.
Yeah.
And I'm actually busy dealing with other people who are having giant parasocial fandoms.
And I also think there's a difference between being a fan and being parasocial. And I have lost a lot of that parasocial element by my frontal lobe developing when I turned 25
no,
at the end of this
literally.
Month. Like, that's it.
You like gain boundaries mentally.
Like, between working in the industry and seeing the other side of it and being like, oh, that's actually kind of scary. Mm-hmm. And then, like, it really makes you think about the way that you interact with people and the way that you think about people. And then also just like, becoming older and being like, actually, I need to pay my rent this month. And so this person on TikTok cannot take up this much of my brain.
That's so annoying. I wish I could just be 14 again and be reading fanfic for
like
12 hours.
That's my controversial take. My friends hate when I say this. I miss senior year of high school.
Say it.
No responsibilities. A lot of money. Where was I getting all of my money from? It wasn't my mom, and I wasn't working at the time. So, like, where was I getting my money from? And I also had, like, the freedom to run around and not worry about things. I was done with high school, so I was only writing fan fiction at school all day. So, like,
and thank you
back.
For your contribution.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. I was big in the Marvel fandom for a really long time.
I wasn't there. All right, Sky. So, you are essentially a behind the scenes person at Dropout, but you are also someone that the Dropout fandom engages with in social media and parasocially.
Yes.
What the hell?
Yeah, that's also what I said. I like, we were talking off camera. I came from this like hippie school that did not encourage electronic media or electronic use until adulthood.
Wow.
So I think I didn't know how to social media, and I still think I don't know.
Wait, like how old is adulthood after high school?
I got an Instagram run by my mother when I was 14, and then did not get a phone with a full screen, like a smartphone, until I was 16.
Okay.
And then I had like limited access to it, so I wasn't allowed to, like, there were restrictions on it. I wasn't really allowed to use social media. I think by the time I was 17 or 18, my mom sort of gave up on many aspects of parenting teen me, who was a bitch to everyone, but specifically
you're like, telling my story like to a T.
Yeah,
By 17, my parents were like, we don't even know where you sleep.
Yeah, and I would be like, fully. Yeah. My mom and I have a better relationship now, but sometimes we talk about, she's like, I didn't know where you were. Like,
yeah.
You have good friends, so I trusted that. So I had a lot more access, but it's just sort of like this thing of like, which I guess points to that system of raising a child. Like, I didn't know what to do with it. So I would post a lot of shit that was not interesting to anyone else. I basically had like a Finsta,
right?
And like two followers from real life, and that was it for most of my life. I've never had like a big social media following. Even like comparatively, it's not really something that bothers me, but I'll like notice like when like my friends from high school have like thousands of followers just from being like a real person, right? And being social and pretty, and I'm like nicely stuck at 200, and I'm like, okay, so there's something that I'm not getting here about how to use this platform. So I never like had a lot of social media following or anything, and then I think I started quote tweeting like official dropout tweets and stuff. And just like making like not even saying like I worked on this, but just making references, like they would make a joke in the caption and I'd like build on the joke. And people would extrapolate from that I worked there, or from like Abria Iyengar, who works on many things but has worked at our company, followed me back, and that pushed a wave of people. Abria's banned from Twitter. Abria and I don't interact on Twitter, but I think people just would click on my profile and see like followed by XYZ people. And so I would start getting like social media followings and people would like respond. And I think there's something very interesting about like being in that in between and not being famous myself, where people know that I'm more approachable. Because like you can reply to like very famous people on Twitter, but they're not necessarily gonna interact with it. And there's something about me being more touchable and more like close to their level, I feel like, just in terms of like social stratosphere, that people will engage with my content in the hopes of it reaching other people.
Right.
Which doesn't super bother me. I am like, you're wrong. Like, a lot of people from work don't follow me back. And those that do, I hope to God they're not seeing what I tweet. Because I, like, we recently got, we had to sign, like, company values. We've been growing as a company. So we had to, like, get an HR system and all of that. And so they had to sign it. And there was a section about social media use where they were like, you know, like, obviously your personal social media is your personal social media. But, like, we just ask that you keep in mind that you work for our company, that people associate you with our company when you post. Not directed at, like, anyone, but just as a general rule, which is a good rule. And I sort of laughed it off. But then, like, recently, I have been tweeting less because every time I go to post something crazy, I'm like, I can't in good faith put this on the internet.
Totally.
After signing that with my whole chest. Like,
right.
There was something I was going to post about, like, coochie waxing recently that I had to be like, no.
Is coochie waxing a dropout value?
Yeah, no, exactly. And ultimately, at this point in time, the answer is no.
Not yet.
Not yet. I'm working on it.
I actually think it is or is not a dropout value, but it's not a dropout on social media value.
Yes.
It would be certainly discussed in a show.
No, and probably has been. We've recently released a lot of like very raunchy shows, but it is sort of like not like that's content as a company. Definitely not the kind of thing that they would want me to be posting.
Part of the marketing.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think just watching how people engage with much more famous people online has made me a lot more cautious about what I post, which I've always like I said, very restricted social media access. My mom was very, very wary. She's kind of paranoid about a lot of things. And so when I was very, very young, part of the reason I didn't get a social media until so late is she was like, this is a digital footprint. It will follow you your entire life. And she said that because I have no impulse control and I'll say anything with my chest and mean it. And so she would really warn me and be like, you have to be very careful about what you put on the internet. And my philosophy was always like, I was like, I have never said anything and not meant it. Like, there's nothing, I've never said a slur online or in real life, but like in any traceable way. And there's nothing that you could bring up to me that it might be embarrassing, but it's not going to be something that I don't stand by to some aspect, or wouldn't be able to say, yeah, that's kind of an embarrassing take, but I was also 14, you know? Like,
right.
So I always had this like feeling of like, no, it'll be fine because I say what I mean and I stand by what I mean. But then like my frontal lobe developed. And so now I am a little more cautious of like, people will misconstrue anything on the internet and take things out of context and bring things up. And
I love to misconstrue.
Yeah. It's my best friend and I reference constantly the like tweet where someone was like, you can say on Twitter, I like pancakes, and someone will be like, so you hate waffles. Like that is exactly how Twitter discourse goes. And so as much as I would stand by my opinions about coochie waxing,
right,
that's sort of not what I want someone to bring up in 10 years when they have an issue with me.
That's so true. And how do you feel about sort of like you said, you're kind of neutral on sort of people following you because they make the connection. But like, what about the things that are more direct? Like recently Dropout posted a behind the scenes video. It was from a Dimension 20.
Yeah.
It was from an adventuring party.
I wasn't even on camera. But Brennan Lee Mulligan, who is my boss, and I actually don't know if that's true. I say that all the time. I don't actually know if he's my boss or not.
Can we clear that up, Brennan?
Hey, actually, Clint.
Let us know.
Hey, Clint.
Clint, while we're answering Slack messages, let me know if Brennan's my boss or not. Clint wouldn't know. But he is at least the executive producer of the show, and I work on the show. So that's in some aspects, yeah, he is sort of
a boss.
He's not my reporting boss, but he is a boss.
Right.
But he's also a friend of mine. And I think that episode, if I'm correct, was either shot, it was like a 2-day shoot, or 2-episode shoot, which meant that we were all sort of gearing up for a long day. And it was like, and when I'm on set with the job that I do, like I have to lock in so hard that I can't think about anything else. And so they were being silly and being goofy and doing a bit. And Brennan stormed off of camera to come yell at the crew for basically laughing at him instead of with him. And without thinking about it, I'm facing the monitors and he was behind me. And without thinking about it, I turned around and went like that with my middle finger, went like that, didn't even fully turn around. And I didn't even realize I had done it until he, with his whole chest, goes, Sky Smith just flipped me off. And I was like, snitch, snitch. Everyone can see it. So that's for the cameras.
And then everyone did see it because they posted it as a marketing clip.
Yeah,
it was very
and then
funny.
They clipped it.
It's very funny.
No one told me. One of my closest friends at the company works in marketing. He's the one who posts that stuff. And I'm like, no one thought to warn me.
Yeah.
No one thought to warn me that my name was about to get plastered on Dropout. And I would have said, go for it. Like, it is funny ultimately, and people did like it. And like I said, I don't know anything about social media. So I'm like, yeah, if you think that's good, go for it. But I would have liked a heads up before I got no less than 7 texts from people being like, I just saw you flip off your boss.
And you were like, so he's my boss.
Yeah. So he is my boss. And yeah, and that was sort of crazy because it came at a point where people already knew who I was. And right. So like, I have been mentioned by name on Dropout stuff before, not by full name. Thank you for that, Brennan. But like, I've been like, people will call for things. They'll be like, hey Sky, what is blah, 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 blah. Or like, I think at one point, I don't know if it's out already yet, but Abria said something like, oh, well Sky checks all that stuff when they were talking about something.
Right.
So like, my name does get floated around. People do know that I work there. Some people have made the connection to my social media either because I'll post it. Like I quoted that video when it came out because I was like, it is funny and I am proud of it and I will stand by it. But
I stand by my flipping Brennan Lee Mulligan off.
I like posted a TikTok where I was like, I think I've definitely done it again since then. Like that's just how I react to things. And it really was so subconscious. So it was the first time I think that they posted something referring to me and people knew who that social media person was.
Right.
Because I had the experience a couple months before of the first time that had ever happened to me. And it truly scared the living daylights out of me. Like I was like, do I delete all of my social media right now?
What
like,
happened?
So I was in Smarty Pants very briefly. And I was working, I was the second assistant director on that one. And we had to have someone bring in props onto this shoot and onto the camera. But the focus wasn't on me. Like I was dressed all in black on purpose. I was just there to port it in. And I was there because the cast was familiar with me. And so they knew to expect it. They knew who it was coming from. I could talk to them about like, well, how do you want me to do it? And then I brought it in. I'm on screen for less than 2 seconds on each time it happens. One of the shots, it's just my hands. Another time I come on and I think one of the actors says like, thanks guy or something like that. But I'm truly less than a second on camera because the focus is on the thing I'm holding. And someone, when that episode came out, just cold tweeted me at skysmith.jpg. Cool to see you in the episode.
A fan.
And you were like, you saw me?
No. And I was like, because I was like, I don't mind people following me on social media and going, this Twitter account works at Dropout. And I don't mind people seeing me on camera and going, that person works at Dropout. It was the connecting of the two, of someone seeing me and by face or by name, maybe going, oh, that's this person on Twitter, that scared the living daylights out of me. Because it just has never happened to me before. Not even an inherently negative thing. It was a very sweet tweet. I did like it. It wasn't bad by any means, but it was just new.
Yeah.
I have never been recognizable like that. I actually stopped acting. I started out in this industry wanting to be on camera or on stage or whatever. And I stopped because I had like a teacher tell me like, you don't seem like you actually want to do that. Like, I love to act. I love to perform. I don't want that recognition in the same way that many people do. And so she was like, it's not that you're not good at it. It's that people who want it more will beat you out. And like,
damn, girl.
Yeah. And when she was very nice about it, and she wrapped it up by saying, you'd also be very good behind the camera if that's what you want to do. And that's how I ended up doing what I do now. So like, very sweet conversation. But it did sort of make me aware of who I was as a person, of like, as much as I don't like, I want to be recognized for the work I do. I want to do work that matters to people. And I don't mind being recognized. I don't mind being known. It still is startling, and it's not something that I chase in the same way that a lot of people on social media do. Again, yeah, not a negative thing, but just not something that I possess as a trait. So it was scary the first time it happened.
Totally.
I was like, well, now that you, like, I'm being perceived is really what it is. Like, I'm being perceived, and I don't know if I want that.
Uh-oh.
Right. I like attention. I don't like being perceived, and I don't know what to do with that.
That's a real problem. And it's also, I think it's relevant to the fact that you do have all this experience with these like colleagues and friends who have extremely parasocial fandoms.
Yes.
And probably do have tons and tons of negative experiences.
Yes, definitely. We've had people, I actually don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but I'll say it anyways. Super late time to be saying this. Obviously, I don't speak for the company or for their views on anything. They actually don't know I'm here. And I might get in trouble later. I was like, should I tell them? And then I was like, nah, it's not for the company. So it really is not for the company. They don't know I'm here. And if you make
it
about them,
Sky.
Yeah. If you make it about them, I will get in trouble. And then I'll find you. I am scary on the
I'll
internet.
Find you.
I have found people off of nothing more than a Venmo transaction. Don't fucking test me.
Sounds like a promise.
Yeah. We have had people show up to places that I work, like fans.
Mm.
And it's really, really scary because they could be very nice people.
Yeah.
But you never know.
You never know. And that's a boundary. And things can, like, especially in a day and age where people showing up places they shouldn't be is a big red flag.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it really, really is alarming. And it's like, no matter how good the intentions are, there are definitely aspects of like a parasocial relationship where if you don't know the boundary and if you're not aware of your own parasocial element, it can become really, really scary. Like, I think a lot of people who go into this industry to be actors or go into the music industry or do something front facing, they have prepared their social medias for that kind of thing. They are careful about what they post. And so I like walk this weird line where I'm like, I love getting new followers. I love making people listen to me talk about the TV show Bones online for like just walls of tweets. And I'm like, and I know why you followed me. And this is what we're talking about now.
I love when I follow someone and then they're like,
yeah,
my whole thing is Bones is Empire. And I'm like, oh, I didn't sign up for that. But now I'm seeing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And I do it with my full chest and I love it and I'm never going to be ashamed of it. And so I do love like making, like having a captive audience. I'm like, yeah, great. But I think the next level of that, it's that like distinction between like fan and parasocial, of like the next level of that being people who want to be more invested in your life than you're willing to give them is scary in a way.
Right.
And it was scary. Like, I've had Brennan be like, oh, I saw one of your tweets. Brennan doesn't follow me on Twitter, and I don't necessarily want him to because he has so many followers that I'm like
terrifying.
But he'll be like, oh, I saw one of your and I'm like, what do you mean you saw one of my tweets? You don't follow me. Why are you seeing that shit? Like,
Because the Twitter algorithm is
because of the Twitter algorithm. And that's like not something either because I wasn't raised with social media or because it's always changing and it's so new or whatever. It's not something that I am ever prepared for. Like when my tweets hit like hundreds of thousands of people, I'm like, frightening, not what I wanted.
Yeah.
I tweeted this for the 1500 people that follow me and somehow have stayed.
Such a Tumblr mentality.
Yeah.
You have such a Tumblr mentality. Because for anyone who doesn't know, Tumblr historically did not have an algorithm. No. So you only saw something. You only saw something if someone you followed posted it or or they reblogged something someone else.
And it's actually funny that you say that. I don't think I've ever realized that about myself. But my first social media account, because I wasn't allowed to have one, was Tumblr. And that was my secret. When I was like 14, I had a secret Tumblr. And
loved it.
I was Tumblr. Minorly Tumblr famous. But it was like a community.
Yes.
I was followed by people who were interested in my interests.
And there's definitely still an element of clout, but it's much less important on Tumblr.
Yes.
Like much less important how many followers you have because it's not publicly viewable.
Yes.
Much less like notes.
It's more about the reaching the wider community. Yeah. It's more about having people who like interact with your stuff because they enjoy it.
Exactly.
More than anything. And that's, I think, what social media was supposed to be for me and my brain. And so having it turn into something more algorithm based is frightening in a way.
Yeah.
Even on like Tumblr or TikTok, I will like anytime I post a video that even vaguely mentions Dropout, people really jump on it, which I understand. We have a very active fan base, particularly on social media. But it does take me by surprise every time in a way. It probably shouldn't anymore. But I am like, the first time I ever had a video go viral on TikTok, I stopped posting for a year.
So you were like, that was too much.
Yeah.
That was
which
way
is like
too
the
much.
Opposite of, that's what I mean when I'm like, I don't know how to social media. I know you're supposed to like capitalize it. And when it happened to me again, I made like a couple videos replying to comments. Less because I wanted traction and more because I was like, you guys want to know. My worst trait is that I'm a know-it-all. And so I'm like, you guys want to know something that I know. And so I will tell you. But even that, like, once I was sort of done, I haven't really posted anything of significance since then either. Like, that was a couple months ago.
Right.
Like, it really, it does, it is sort of scary when it's not, like, something you want. When you're not built to be an influencer or trained to be an influencer or something like that. It's overwhelming.
So, something I'm really curious about is working with people who... Like, you know, Abria doesn't have a Twitter or got banned from Twitter.
Yeah, Abria has one.
People who like are having to think really strategically about what is my social media presence because I'm going to have a fandom no matter what. So I engage with it or I don't engage with it. Like, I'm really curious about sort of the power dynamics of being a real person, Sky, a real person in real life, interacting and working and hanging out with these other real people where fans would view that as like currency.
Yes.
So
very
I just
much.
Think it's like kind of confusing. Like if I was you, I would be like, I kind of see you guys as my peers, but I also know that, you know,
you guys don't see me that way.
Or maybe they do, but it's like I also have this extra layer of like I know that my access to you is currency to a fandom.
Totally.
You know, like it that's
does,
weird.
I do have to like be careful about what I post. Like I have multiple friends now who have babies who are not public facing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have all of these adorable pictures of like people's babies or even just stuff where like someone's baby is in a picture in the picture.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't post those because it is almost a guarantee that someone who really, really, really wants to be involved in this person's life will find those pictures.
Totally.
Like they'll hunt it down. And it's like, again, like parasocial as a general term is a neutral thing. It's not even that I'm casting judgment on them for having that urge. It's more that like you have to like, it's not even an intrusive thought. Like I'm thinking about like, there have definitely been people in my life that I parasocially engaged with where I was like, oh, I want to know more about their life. I want to know their personal life. But I think partially maybe because I grew up, like I was born and raised somewhat in LA and like grew up down the street from Billie Eilish. And like
right.
I had somewhat of a, it's called, I think, orthosocial when it's in real life. Like relationship with people like Sabrina Carpenter and Renee Rapp and Rachel Zegler, where they were like friends of friends before they got very famous just by virtue of being in entertainment circles. And so like there always is a weird line, and I completely understand the urge to like think someone is cool and want to know more about them.
Yeah.
But because I was raised sort of seeing both sides of that sword, I think I've always known where the boundary is, which has enabled me to have relationships with people that I knew parasocially. Mm-hmm. Because I work with a lot of people where maybe I wasn't really active in Dropout fandom, but I had watched stuff before I started working there. I definitely, there are certain people there that I know of and knew of at the time. And so there was always this aspect of like seeing them arrive at set for the first time and being like, oh my God, they're a real person. Wait, they're not just like a little person in my phone. Right. That's crazy. But I know how to act normal. Like, I hate to say it, but like,
yeah.
I do know how to act normal around people. I know how to keep that inside and sort of grow past it once you get to know someone. And I think that's sort of the element that is missing from the parasocial conversation of like, everyone has those urges. Mm-hmm. Everyone, like, it's a part of human nature to idolize people. It's a thing that dates back to like the stories in the Bible, regardless of your view on Bible or Torah or whatever it is.
Say it. Say it.
It's in the cultural zeitgeist of like people from, you know, the early like 100 AD had hero worship. Greek myths are all hero worship.
Right.
Like, it's always been a part of the culture. The difference is that between social media and just cultural shifts, you could get me started on like late stage capitalism and how that factors in here. Like, culturally, yeah, like it's become, the boundary has become thinner and thinner. The barriers have become less and less. And so it's not an inherently negative thing, but the lack of knowing where the boundary is and knowing like, what the difference between a thought and an action has turned it into something that's mostly negative now. Mm. In a way that is like honestly really sad, because hero worship is cool. It's cool to have people you admire. It's part of what makes us grow as a culture and a community. But we will lose, like, Chapel Roan is such a huge voice for people, and especially youth in the Midwest, in parts of the world where it's not safe to come out, in parts of the world where having those relationships and having that identity is tricky. Mm-hmm. Very important to have that idolatry, for lack of a better word, for those people who don't see themselves in other aspects and other celebrities. But when you cross that boundary, when you make it dangerous, lose it.
Especially.
Yeah. Yes. So you lose, I think about this all the time, because there is like music that Chapel Roan isn't releasing because of this whole thing. There are performances she's canceling because of this whole thing. And I don't blame her at all. Like, part of me thinks that she should fully disappear for her own good. And that sucks, because she is such a good pillar and such a good person for people to admire and look up to and use as a standard to grow and learn.
Right.
And so it's like this weird Ouroboros of like the hero worship has become a thing that is driving our heroes away.
Right. Sky, open up that notebook.
That rocked.
It's time for the Sky Scholar Hour.
Yeah.
As if we haven't already been living in
right,
it.
Right, right.
Sky.
Yeah.
I heard you have some notes on our podcast.
I have less notes than I thought. I did focus on your guys' episode because it felt rude to like have notes on
to
other
be like,
guests.
I actually think this person right. should have said, yeah.
Right, yeah. So I did focus on your guys' episodes, but sort of cut down. A lot of my notes I realized were just that like I can't be silenced. And so like I would hear you guys talk about stuff and I'd be like, well, I have something to add to this conversation. Not productive. I just want to say that.
He talks back to us and sometimes he'll pause so that he can say something.
Yeah.
And I was
so
like,
cute.
That is the goal of the Parasocial Podcast, and, you know, kind of
the
perfect.
I was fully thinking about that on the way over. I was like, I kind of have a parasocial relationship with Jewel and Charlie. Like,
we did it.
Yeah.
We did it,
I
folks.
Actually keep getting this feedback from my friends who listen, where they're like, they like are like, ha ha, I don't know how to talk to you about things you've talked about on the podcast. Like, I'm confused.
I just do it.
Where's the line?
We're friends, but you're also now a podcast host, which, by the way, thank you guys for listening. I fucking appreciate you. But yeah, anyways, it's been interesting.
If you guys haven't rated it 5 stars wherever you're listening, like, oh I have, you're fucking losers. Fucking behind the ball. I rated it 5 stars as soon as I fucking could.
Thank you so much.
One thing about me is I'll be aggressive for no reason, I guess.
Okay, give it to us, please.
Yeah. Okay, so
school us.
The first thing is actually from the most recent episode that dropped. Okay. And it was that Charlie was like, I misused the word hark. And then you guys were like, I don't know where hark comes from.
Harkening. Yes, yes,
and,
please.
And I am a linguistics nerd. Obviously, I've been talking about like linguistics and anthropology this entire time. And so I happen to know that hark is actually old archaic English.
When people hark, go like, the Herald Angels. Herald Angels.
Yes. Yeah, okay. And so what it means to listen. At its core, it's a word that means listen. It's biblically used. Angels often say it because they're like, hey, bitches, listen up.
God, angels are always saying hark.
One thing about angels
be like, hey, bitches, listen.
Yeah, one thing about angels is they'll always be like, hark, bitches. And so that's where it, like, that's the origin of it. That's where it comes from.
Wow.
But it's used actually to say, like, to refer back to something because of hunting. So in olden days... archaic English days, hunters would say hark forward and hark back in hunting parties to keep the party together. So it would be like hark, like, hey, listen up, we're about to change direction, forward, or hark back. And hark back meant to go back the way you would come or the way that the hunting party had come. So it became known as like hearkening back to something. You're using it to refer back. Yeah. That has nothing to do with parasocial anything, but I was like, wait, I know
that
this.
Really, thank you, because I had forgotten and now I have my
and
answer.
You were really upset.
I was pretty upset because...
Which was funny because I heard you talk about that. I got so excited because I knew what it meant. And then I did not catch it in the actual episode.
Amazing. Amazing.
I was like, wait, where was
just
it?
Just the way I used it, I was like, I don't think I'm actually using it to mean refer back to.
Can anyone give us the timestamp? Because I don't remember
I'll
when that
happened. I'll find it. I meant it more like you are referencing this thing, like you're in reference to, not...
That would be too
like,
hark
feels
back
like the
to.
Past. Yeah. No, that is, I think, how I used it. But
then you were right.
But referencing something current, I don't think is harkening back.
If it's like in the current conversation and you've, like, you could be like, I could be like, to harken back to what I was saying about late stage capitalism.
I think it was more like to say like... My Lakers jersey harkens back to the Lakers. And it's like, well, no.
Not exactly.
Yeah.
If that's time fair, is a flat circle, maybe.
Right, right.
See, and that is a use case circle. Where I wouldn't correct it, but I would probably clock it a little bit.
Completely.
Where I'd be like,
I felt
oh,
it
interesting.
Immediately.
But so, I wouldn't correct it, which is saying something, because I'll correct anyone.
You're
like
well, that's
like
not
I said,
bad.
Worst thing about me is I'm like, I hate to be wrong. And I don't hate to be wrong in the sense that I hate to be proven wrong. I just hate to not like to have misinformation. I love to learn things. And so I have been reminded by teachers and have to constantly remind myself, like, not everyone wants that. Like, you have to let it go sometimes.
Totally. Sadly. But thank you. I needed
sadly.
That.
Yes, absolutely. I'm glad I could help. That was just exciting for me. I didn't even have that written down. What else did I have? Oh, Cold War kid story. If that happened to me, I would have been on the news.
Jill really kept it under wraps.
That's crazy to me. And like, I know Charlie mentioned it in the episode and you sort of brushed past it, but I was like, no. What in the Wattpad? If that happened to anyone else, they and the band would have ended up in the news.
Yes.
They would have ended up Diddy.
It's amazing you're alive.
No, actually.
It's amazing they're alive.
It's amazing they're alive. It's amazing they're not
and
canceled.
I got to tell you guys something. I just saw them a few months ago at the Fonda. A great show. I loved it.
That is the craziest thing to me. Is
that
you didn't
stop. That's also crazy that you keep going.
Yeah.
It did, you know, it did freak me out, but to me, I didn't cancel them in my heart. I still love them.
God, that's crazy. Wow.
I still love them. Great show. I love their show. That's I love the Fonda too. My favorite venue. Keep playing it.
Really?
Yep.
It I has think you said in the episode, you were like, ideal level of fame is when they can still play the Fonda.
Yep. I love the Fonda. It has Hieronymus Bosch's hell painting all over the ceiling.
I have that tattooed on my leg.
See?
Did you know that?
Everybody
there you
loves
go.
This. What else can you ask for?
My okay. grandma, at the end of her life, she was not really thinking the same, and she saw I got a brand new tattoo of the guy who's got birds coming out of his
I
ass.
I love him.
And my grandma said, "That's beautiful." And I was like, "Well, no."
Well, no.
It's actually from a painting of hell, and kind of he's got ass birds, but thanks.
Your grandma would have loved the Fonda.
Oh, she would have.
My grandmother once handed me $200 and then immediately followed it up with, don't use it to put more holes in your face.
Jesus awesome. Christ. That's so grandma
she would
core.
Not
so I
have
bought
liked
a gun.
Tattoo. Yes. So instead I bought a gun. And I did get a tattoo to honor her after she passed. And my mom was like, she would hate that. Like,
that's what I love the most. Yeah.
That's so punk.
Yeah.
You're like, good.
Yeah, but it's beautiful. And it's in her memory. Grandma, you're welcome.
R.I.P.
Oh my God. This note just says, someone give me a Raya code. I want to be a WAG. We didn't so much talk about like this aspect, but I think I do have like a weird parasocial element with soccer players, specifically women's soccer players. I don't know anything about men's soccer, but I'm heavily into women's soccer because of a girl that I liked. And since then, it has grown into an obsession for myself. And I think that I was sort of built to be a soccer girlfriend.
We can make this happen.
Yeah, I need it to happen. Yeah. Like, I know enough about the game to be invested and involved and like supportive, but like I don't really care enough to like be emotionally
right. Exactly. Hurt.
Yeah, I think it was born to happen, and I have tweeted this so many times, and no soccer player has ever slid into my DMs. Yeah,
okay, that's upsetting. If anyone even related to a sport is listening, let's get on this, okay?
Give me a soccer lesbian. And a lot of them are lesbians. A lot of female soccer players are lesbians.
Sky would be a great WAG.
That'd be a great WAG. I go to almost every Angel City game, despite the fact that I don't leave my apartment for anything else.
Sky's already there.
I'm already there. I did.
How easy is that?
I did once fumble a girl in the parking lot of Angel City, and I think about it every day.
Wherever you are.
Katie, who lived in London during the 2012 Olympics. Katie. I think about you often.
That's
actually really creepy because we had a 5-minute conversation. It's a very casual thinking about. I just think we would really hit it off. Anyways, this is turning into something else. The Chapel Roan conversation. Mm. The one thing I think that you guys didn't touch on that's really interesting to me is the difference between Chapel Roan and Kaylee, whatever her actual last name is. Because she worked really hard to build a persona, essentially a drag persona. And for that to be what got famous, and people, I don't think, realize that there's a difference between who Chapel Roan is and, again, Kaylee, whatever her name is. The point is, I don't know it for a reason.
For anyone who doesn't know, that's Chapel Roan's real name.
Yes.
And part of this discourse was Chapel Roan in her call out post being like, hey, stop harassing me, stop all of this like bad behavior.
She was like, you don't know who I am, and people got really, really offended
and
about
that.
She was
like, stop using my real name.
Yes,
that's not appropriate.
And
right, and that never is. That always weirds me out on Wikipedia when you can see an artist's like legal name, because I'm like, but that's the whole point.
Mm-hmm.
Is they said, don't call me that.
It should say Lady Gaga the whole way through.
Lady
on the Wikipedia
Gaga.
Mm-hmm. It should not say whatever her real name is.
I don't know.
Like
Genevieve.
I think that is very, that's definitely not it. So close.
Giovanni.
Did you say Denise?
Yeah.
Denise is Lady Gaga's
last
real name. Anyways, that was a big part of that.
Big
too.
Distinction. I think something also just the whole discussion of like, well, she doesn't deserve to be famous. I'm like, what do you think being famous is? What do you think being famous is? Because let me get really aggressive for a second about this. Being famous is a byproduct of making something that people connect to. Being famous, the only career in which being famous is the goal is being an influencer. And Chapel Roan is not an influencer and has never wanted to be an influencer. Chapel Roan made music from a very young age for a subculture, for a group of people, queer people, queer people. And it's as much as I'm sure she wanted her music career to grow, I don't think her goal was ever fame. She talks about that in her music.
This is the thing that never makes any sense to me, is when people say that person doesn't deserve to be famous. But I'm like, okay, but you believe that artists deserve to make money off of what they make. And the way you make more money is you gain some notoriety and you have a following.
Yes.
So in order to do XYZ for a living, like to some extent, you do have to at least get... maybe not famous, but like there has to be fandom and people consistently paying for whatever you're making. And it makes me go cuckoo bananas, because it's like, it's not like what they wanted out of fame was to be harassed and followed around, but they do want to be able to sell an album. So
yes.
So shut up.
Shut up. I don't think people understand what it means to be an artist anymore. I don't think people understand what fame really is, because people are like, she doesn't deserve to be famous. And I'm like, I agree, but the other way around. I'm like, you guys are being mean, and being famous is being mean. And she doesn't deserve that, because she's doing really important work and making really incredible art. Very recently, I have very much only been drawn to queer music. And that's like a thing that I didn't know I needed, because it wasn't as readily available to me growing up. It was like Fast Car and Hayley Kiyoko. And I did watch the Hayley Kiyoko video
girls
when my mom
girls.
Was out of the room on repeat the entire hour she was gone.
Yep.
but that was it. And also, like, Girls Like Girls had a very straightforward poppy sound. Mm-hmm. Like, it wasn't inherently queer in anything other than the message, in a way. And I think Hayley Kiyoko's music has changed over the years to become more of that. But it's like a very, it's a niche that wasn't filled enough, because it was impossible to fill it in the music industry until very recently. It was not allowed to be successful to the level it is. And so I think when people are like, well, she doesn't deserve to be famous, like, this is just a part of the job, like, it shouldn't be.
No, of course not.
It shouldn't be. If you have any job in the world where you're like, if you were famous for being an electrician and you were getting stalked for being an electrician, that would be bad. People would say, hey, that shouldn't happen. Hey, we should probably pass legislation about people getting stalked for being an electrician.
Leave
for being
our
good
electrician
at
alone. He's so good at lights,
he's
and he
so
just wants to go home to his family.
Sky, do you have any more notes for our podcast before we do rapid evasive questions?
Yes.
Please. I need to hear them.
Maybe. I don't know. I said yes so quickly. Big ups to Butter on Toast is one of my notes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
In the end, I agree.
Big ups to Butter on Toast. There was a time in my life where I ate a buttered waffle every single day.
Yes.
Yum. Yeah. Same.
Delicious. Buttered
my
toast
whole
waffle?
Childhood. Yes, an Eggo waffle.
An Eggo?
I love Eggo.
Slathered in butter.
Gosh.
That's a meal.
Nothing better.
That's a meal.
Try it with whipped cream next time.
Mm. Yeah, always good. My problem is that I don't go grocery shopping often enough, so I have spoiled whipped cream in my fridge, and I'm tempted to use it.
That's real.
I'm tempted. I can't.
It's right there.
I have to test my eggs before I cook them because I don't know how long I've had them. So I have to put them in water to see if they're still good, and they're usually not. And my other semi-serious note is that I saw someone once saying that they wanted Muna to have chapel level fame. And I was like, shut that shit down.
Terrifying.
I don't want Muna to have chapel level fame. I think that they're at a nice spot. And I think this is actually, I think they're a little past the nice spot, but I'll give it to them. I think all artists should sit at this nice spot where you can get the gigs you want to get, but you don't have people telling you don't deserve to be famous. Like, I think that's sort of the sweet spot. And in conclusion, I think we should gatekeep Muna a little bit.
That's why we haven't discussed them on the podcast.
Yeah, that's my Muna. Bad, but I had things to say.
No, just kidding. The real reason is because it's too personal. Yeah, so that's I didn't want to talk about it.
It's actually too close to home for Jewel.
I didn't want to discuss it. I am looking across to where I think that those band members live now. I'm looking out a window to where I think they live. That's how...
In your mind?
That's why we're not talking about
wow.
it.
And that's
wow.
so fair.
Neighbors.
And that's a great example of a parasocial boundary. Like, you can have that information because it's something you're curious about
yep.
and not share it.
And I won't be sharing it on the pod. But yeah. But I am glad you brought up Muna because it's a big relief for me.
Yeah.
It's
someone had to.
Huge relief.
Someone had to. Someone and had at least to. It wasn't you in this instance.
Thank you so much for your DVD commentary on our podcast.
That was fantastic. So we have some somewhat rapid invasive questions.
Yes. Yes.
You're going to need your phone.
Yes.
Perhaps you're familiar.
With my phone?
With your phone.
Yes.
Hey, open up an app of your choosing. We say yes. Instagram's the best. You know how it is.
I do.
All right.
Sorry, I already know the first question, uh-huh. and the answer is not what I thought it was going to be.
How many unread DMs do you have?
Currently two.
Oh. Uh-oh.
And this is surprising because I usually answer, I'm like very responsive. I actually, let me check my requests. Currently, I have one request.
And then what about
I have another hidden one that is not in a language I speak, which is crazy because I speak five languages.
brag.
slight brag there.
You're like, ooh, this one's a deep cut.
Right. I'm like, oh, we didn't hit one of the languages. But also recently Instagram, I don't know if I had too many on like of the requests, but it started glitching. I had a request from someone that I was like, oh, connect, like I want to connect with you. They went through LinkedIn. To be clear, someone asked me about my job on LinkedIn and did so very professionally. And I said, yes, let's chat.
LinkedIn.com.
LinkedIn.com. That's where that energy needs to go, not my TikTok.
LinkedIn.ed.
Yeah.
IN.
Good
Great.
Job.
Thank you.
And so I told her to connect with me and then...
And
didn't,
it went poof?
And yeah, and I forgot to follow her back. And then I went to go look for it because I was like, wait.
It gets deleted.
Yeah, because I'm not on Vyvanse. And so I forgot, and then when I remembered, I went to go look, and then I saw it, and then it all refreshed, and everything was gone.
Ugh.
And I was like, well, so to that person, if you're watching this, give me another. Try it again.
Try again.
I'll answer this
one more
time, I promise.
One more time.
Yeah, so I used to have more, but currently
how many
two.
Unread text messages do you have?
I almost very confidently said none, but I could be
but
lying.
You've been here.
One.
One.
I think it was from a brand. Casely.
Oh, Casely. How many, oh wait, no. Do you have your read receipts turned on?
No. And it scares me when people do, I will say.
I understand.
Charlie has them on.
I know.
I think the majority of people with them on don't know you can turn them off.
And you're, how old are you, Sky?
24.
There's a generational divide. And
I do know one
I'm
person
on the right side of it.
Who is my age who does have their red receipts on.
And that's how you say it?
That is how I say it. And I do hate to inform you
red.
Of this.
Thank you.
You're wrong.
Thank you for being brave.
It's not red receipts.
I swear
on the pod being brave.
Hate to tell you this.
Standing up and kind of being the bravest version of yourself.
I kind of actually think, though, it has, despite the fact that I'm very obviously interested in linguistics, it has little to do with actual like what the correct answer is and more with the fact that I hate the E sound.
You have just presented the only argument I will accept.
I just don't like the E sound.
Yeah.
That is a valid argument, Sky.
Thank you so much.
You're still wrong,
yeah,
but your argument
you
is
can
valid.
See, right. You can see how we got there.
Do you search for yourself online?
Only on Twitter. And only
oh.
Twitter.
Well, because someone once left a very interesting comment on a video, on the video of me flipping off my boss, in which they said, this person, Sky Smith, is a very uniquely generic name or something like that. And I was like, and you're right. Like, if I Google the word Sky Smith, I'm not going to find myself.
Exactly.
I think. I don't know. I've never tried. But because they keep either referring to me in stuff or recently I went to the 20 Sided Tavern in New York to go visit a coworker who was a friend. That sounded so shady. A friend of mine from work who was doing the 20 Sided Tavern. And then we went to the stage door and then they went, can I tell people you're here? And I was like, they're friends in the show. And then I was like, yeah. And then they turned around and to the entire crowd went, Sky Smith, the lore keeper at Dimension 20 is here. And I have never left a stage door so fast in my life.
Bye.
I used to camp out at stage doors and I turned and ran. And after that, I did also look because I was like, I wonder if anyone's going to tweet about it. That would be crazy.
Yeah.
The answer is no. Most people don't. I think I've gotten like one response of someone being like, oh, someone asked a question about my job, but like not directly to me, just to the Twitter zeitgeist. And someone that followed me was like, oh, they did an interview about it here. So that's the only context that I ever see it pop up in.
Right.
And unfortunately, anyone on Twitter who has Lorekeeper in their display name is sort of incredibly vocal. In many ways.
I can imagine.
So I don't search it very often because I end up getting buried in these tweets that I don't care about. I hate to say it.
Rest in peace, yeah. All Lorekeepers.
Yeah.
What is your blocking philosophy?
I recently had someone very famous confess to me that their blocking philosophy is to block people who reply to accounts that they're blocked, that they have blocked.
Oh.
Because they're just kind of like, if we're interacting with that, I don't want to deal with it. And I've sort of adopted that, but I didn't have very many accounts blocked in the first place. Like, my thing with social media is if I don't like something, I'll swipe, because that's what a normal person does.
Right.
So, if I don't, the only time, I think I have Trump blocked because I kept getting stupid POTUS ads that I didn't want. I have Elon Musk blocked because I kept getting stupid Elon Musk ads I didn't want. Like, if it's an ad, I'll block it so I stop seeing
completely.
It.
Completely. It's annoying that you have to block an account to stop seeing ads, though.
Yeah.
It's like, you were never a part of my algorithm.
Right.
I thought. Yeah.
But that's, I really don't have many people blocked. I like to get spicy on the internet.
Shocking.
Yeah.
Discourse, yeah.
I'll say anything and I'll sort of mean it and I'll engage in discourse and like, I don't block people very often.
Do you know the demographic analytics for Sky fans?
Am I doing viewers or followers?
Viewers. Oh. Let's do viewers.
Viewers, 31% male, 69% female. Nice.
Nice. Oh, wait.
Age?
Kind of did the wrong one.
0% other, which as a non-binary person is sort
now.
Of upsetting to me.
They have other.
It's
inaccurate.
That's
new.
Yeah,
it's inaccurate.
Yeah,
there's no way that's true.
Age is pretty tied for 18 to 24 and 25 to 34,
nice.
Which makes sense for both the dropout viewership and also the people, I think, who would listen to me. 12% 35 to 44. 2% 55 and up.
Wow.
Hello.
Wow. Hello, who's parents.
Definitely 80% United States, 6% United Kingdom, Canada, Turkey, and Brazil.
Ooh. Shouts out to Brazil.
Shouts out to Brazil.
Love that place. Big.
One thing about Brazil.
Big.
Large.
It's finally come time for our fun final segment.
Oh, I've been thinking about this all week.
Do you have any recommendations for us?
I absolutely do. I almost brought in a fanfic just for the bit, but I just fear that...
Oh my God.
And that's how you know I've been a listener since day one.
Oh my, that is a... seriously,
that's a deep cut.
That's going to haunt me for the rest of my life.
That's you even took it off the...
I even took it off the script anymore. That's fucking funny, dude.
I was going to do that, but... My problem is that I am paranoid that any fanfiction I recommend will directly tie back to me as a fanfiction writer.
Same exact problem.
So
I totally agree.
I can't do that, but I wanted you to know that I did in my heart do that. My actual recommendation, I've been really into mobile apps recently. Pikmin Bloom. Love Pikmin Bloom. Have been playing a stupid amount of Pikmin Bloom. I have a game that I play called Dino Mutant in which you mutate dinosaurs. Huge. Huge for autistic people who love dinosaurs.
Wow.
Yeah. That's the wrong part of the notes, just so you know. I had something else. Oh, East Coast Duncan. West Coast Duncan?
Yes.
Not as good.
No,
East Coast
I hear
Duncan?
You.
Yeah.
Good.
That's real. Which is weird because you think it would be across the board.
You think it would be standard.
It's not.
It's not.
There's one in LA that I go to occasionally and it's different iced coffee, I swear.
Yes. It's different and it's worse. And I think actually what it is, and I've had someone posit this to me about why the bagels in New York are so good, it's the tap water.
Yeah, people say.
It's because the tap water
night,
in New York is
someone
delicious.
Someone was saying the pizza. It's good for pizza
water. Yeah, and pizza. I've also heard that.
Sorry, just like, because people have like such intense relationships with the Dunkin' Donuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all those people are on the East Coast.
I'm here.
Midwest.
But you guys are saying the East Coast Dunkin' is the only acceptable Dunkin'.
And I will say, because it only came to the West Coast fairly recently. Because my first real experience with Dunkin' Donuts was when I was in New York for college.
Right.
And then they opened one up at the Glendale Galleria. And I was like, this is disappointing. Not as good.
So this is something to study. I'm interested in this.
I used to get Dunkin' every week when I would go to therapy because the bus stop was right outside of Dunkin'.
Beautiful Pavlovian experience.
Yes. Yeah. And so now it really does spark something up here, but it's the East Coast one.
Anything else to recommend?
Can I give a don't like recommendation, like a recommendation
absolutely.
Of something
a
not to do?
Of course.
Yeah.
A recommend no, if you will. If you get your nails done, don't like keep doing them without giving your nails a break, because I have had multiple of my nails break off halfway up my finger.
That's too far up.
That's too far up. And it wasn't as painful as I thought, but it's sort of frightening to have that much of your nail bed exposed.
Ugh.
But I'm like all for it. Like, as someone who's non-binary and also a lesbian, like, I feel like having nails done is a very interesting part of my expression, where it's like a little bit against the culture in that way. And so it's kind of fun. So I do love doing it, but I did have to like have a moment of reckoning where I was like, you gotta let your nails breathe.
Oh my God. That was sort of, that was heterophobic of your nails to do to you.
Your nails
were like, no, you're
queer.
Well,
and what was funny is right after All Things Go, which is a very queer-centered music festival. And I was like, oh, they want me to get laid.
Yeah.
They want me to get a girl.
Well, shit.
So any soccer players out there?
I'm team your nails for Sky's WAG career.
Good.
Okay.
Anything to promote?
Yeah. How can people... do you want people to follow you?
Yeah, as long as they're...
normal.
Not going to ask for my address. You're welcome to follow me. My socials on most accounts is skysmith.jpg, but if you generic unique name, if you put in Sky Smith, it'll show you which one, because on some social media platforms it's an actual period and on some it's the word dot.
Right.
Because I don't have good branding.
But you're so Tumblr to be named skysmith.jpg.
And that's where it came from.
So beautiful.
I think that's where it came from.
Thank you so much for coming
on
the podcast.
Thank you for letting me yap.
I loved your notes so much, and this is our most scholarly episode.
You know what's crazy is
deeply.
We got through maybe half of them.
That's
I know.
Pretty good.
Yeah, that is pretty good. But subscribe to the Patreon for the rest of them.
Yeah. And if you're looking around, you're going, I don't see a Patreon.
I don't see a Patreon. That's your
problem.
Don't
even worry about it.
Just demand it in the comment section. Then I'll make
go
it.
Go make a Patreon for them.
If you demand something of us,
Charlie
we'll
will
do
give it.
It
to you. Yeah. I learned that today. Okay.
That's
crazy.
Thank you for listening to the Parasocial Social Club. To deepen your parasocial relationship with us, find us on any socials at Parasocial Podcast. This podcast is produced by your hosts and Garrett Labonte. Theme music done by Brady Hicks. And for Garrett's Corner Pick of the Week,
lo-fi recording, because sometimes you don't have the right stuff and you just got to make it work. But sounding bad sounds kind of cool, right?